All our young lives, my identical twin brother Paul and I had searched for a place to belong. We were two Jewish kids who knew no other religious identity, but at the same time were no longer practicing the faith in which we had been raised. Marge, our mother, was a convert, and our father, Hank, had lost his interest in continuing our religious education when the social and financial demands of temple membership exceeded what he thought was fair. And so our bar mitzvah preparations ended abruptly. Our hometown of 12,000, Grand Island, New York, was literally an island, smack dab in the middle of the Niagara River, just 3 miles upstream from the famous falls. When I rode my bike along the West River Road, I could see Ontario, Canada, and when I hitchhiked to a friend's house on the East River, I would look across to the Buffalo suburbs of Kenmore and Tonawanda. We were the youngest of four. Our two sisters, from our mother's first marriage, were 6 and 8 years older. We all loved each other, but our ages, different families of origin, and our respective cultural experiences, they had started out life as Christians, my brother and I as Jews, not to mention the unique bond that is twinship, left Paul and me in our own world. So many times in my life, Paul was the catalyst for momentous change. And none of the biggest moments, not the years of ministry, not the arrests for our acts of conscience and anti-abortion protests, not the move to Washington, D.C., or the work with elected officials, the publicity, or the politics, would have happened if Paul had not forged a friendship with a Methodist minister's son, Charlie Hepler. Charlie was an intense, withdrawn, and troubled boy, but Paul drew him out in long conversations about God, about the Bible, about Christianity, and prayer. My brother would come home and share those conversations with me in the basement room we claimed as our private space. I listened with genuine interest and curiosity, but also skepticism, even worry. I could not ignore all the stories about the Manson family murders or how Hare Krishna devotees had left secure middle-class lives to wear strange robes and sell flowers in airports and on sidewalks. It was a time when weird cults ensnared vulnerable young people and turned them into zombies. My brother was a level-headed guy, so all this talk about Christianity felt unsettling to both my Jewish and secular sensibilities. Our father was not a pious man, but his ethnic Jewish identity was strong and predicated as much in family tradition as in suspiciously viewing any majority religious group as potential persecutors. For me, all Christians were pretty much alike, and I knew nothing about Methodists, much less their founder, John Wesley, who emphasized not the busy, endlessly rationalizing mind, but touching the heart of the believer. As Paul talked about Jesus, I remembered when, as a 6-year-old boy, I went to play at the house of a Portuguese Catholic neighbor. In my little friend's bedroom hung a crucifix, the image of a bloodied man with jutting ribs and a crown of thorns dangling from nails. I was transfixed by it, yet frightened into a sleepless and fitful night. Years later, when I was a pot-smoking 13-year-old, I went to the Buffalo Memorial Auditorium and encountered the man on the cross again, this time earnest but still tragic, from a very different perspective in the rock opera, Jesus Christ Superstar. The musical was consistent with who we were back then, too young to have been involved in the counterculture of the 60s, but just old enough to indulge in its lingering messages and music and challenges to authority. Our father set the tone and the direction, more accurately the lack of direction, for our lives. He subscribed to the hands-off school of parenting with spasms of explosive rage. In general, our early adolescence was remarkably unsupervised. This comported with the way Dad grew up in the 30s and 40s, with a working mother and a chronically ill father who was often hospitalized. For us, though, coming of age during the tempestuous post-Vietnam era meant exposure to the youth culture of the day, but without the existential stakes of being drafted. We protested the bombing of Cambodia, Nixon, and napalm. Jesus as countercultural rebel fit nicely into those times.